Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zimmer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming this morning by Bonnie Harper, who's serving as our worship associate, our music director, Hal Walker, and several members of the congregation who will be sharing their musical talents with us for our opening song today.
May the flame here lit be to us a symbol of the torch that is passed from hand to hand and life to life of caring and concern and the passion for involvement which have marked the men and women of our liberal faith for many generations. Missional church. Is that anything like missionary? I grew up with that. My paternal grandparents were Nazarene missionaries. My grandfather was a Nazarene minister, and my grandmother taught English in the Church of the Nazarene School. I don't ever recall attending a Nazarene church service to hear my grandfather preach a sermon. What I do remember is my grandparents returning from missionary work in the Orient. I know it isn't politically correct now, but that's what we called it in the 50s. What I remember at age five is meeting my grandparents on a huge ship, a freighter, not a cruise ship, and getting to eat lunch with them at the captain's table. They always brought me presents. Yes, I could get into them and I could kind of walk on them. At age 10, I remember picking them up in the airport in the middle of a snowstorm, and they stayed at our house for a few days. It was the first Christmas they'd ever spent in our home. I guess what I really remember was not seeing much of them in my younger years because they were out of the country being missionaries in a foreign country. Fast forward 25 years. My dearest childhood friend, who I'm still friends with, is leaving the country with her husband and three children to spend 4 years in the Philippines to work for Wycliffe Bible Translators, translating the Christian Bible into many native languages. She and her husband returned to the Philippines for an additional couple of years to do this work, and now they follow their life's calling in Oregon. Sounds like missionary work to me. Missionary work. First, not something I ever aspired to or even remotely considered. Second, something I don't really feel comfortable doing. And third, why do we have to go to foreign countries? Maybe there's a new definition of missional work, one that I, as a UU, may be a little more comfortable with. Can we be complacent and keep our values, our purpose, our way of thinking within the walls of this structure? Or do we really need to take that message outside the church walls? No, I still can't do traditional missionary work, but I am comfortable with working at the hot lunch program at the Lutheran Church. Is that missionary work? Is that taking my values outside the walls of this beautiful structure? Come, let us worship together.
To prepare us for a time of silence, meditation, and prayer, words from Ted Loader. Gentle me, Holy One, into an unclenched moment. A deep breath of letting go. A letting go of heavy experiences, of shriveling anxieties, of dead certainties that, softened by the silence, surrounded by the light, and open to the mystery, we may find wholeness, be found by wholeness, upheld by the unfathomable, entranced by the simple, and filled with the joy that is you. Surrounded by the sounds of our community, we in this space will be still and keep silence for a few moments. Each time we gather for worship, we set aside time to widen the caring ministry of this congregation. We take time to memorialize those who have died, to celebrate with those who are joyous, and to call into this community of care those who need our love and support. This morning, will you hold in your thoughts and in your prayers the Maida O'Meara family? Patrick's father died this past week. Gina, Patrick, and Maya all traveled to Florida for his memorial service. And I'm happy to share with you that Esther Duncan is back in the nursing home after her treatment in the intensive care unit last week, and she is doing well. If you've been visiting, we encourage you to continue. And we continue to keep in our hearts and in our minds Caroline Arnold, still at Kent Healthcare, under the care of hospice. Spirit of life and of love, spirit of mystery and wonder, we gather this morning to breathe into an unclenched moment, to breathe into the present moment, letting go of all the anxieties. We all have them, little and large. They come in seasons. Anxiety about what the test will say, whether the treatment will work. Anxiety about whether we'll find the job or keep the job. Will there be enough money? Anxiety about whether our children will succeed, get the support that they need. Anxiety about whether our children will grow into their fullness. Anxiety about whether we'll live long enough to see that happen. So many anxieties, little and large, pop up, trouble our mind and our spirits, weigh heavy in our hearts. And so we gather once again for an unclenched moment and a releasing of anxiety, breathing into the present, because there's nothing we can do about the future. Breathing into this moment, because there's nothing we can know about the future. Breathing here together, reminding ourselves that whatever the future may hold, what we have is right now. This moment, this breath, this community, this summer day, this music, these people, our friends, our families, our lives, so many blessings, all right here, spread around us. So let us breathe. Open our hands, relax our shoulders, and notice the abundance before us, so that our hearts may be filled with peace and gratitude. Amen.
The inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, acceptance of one another, and encouragement to spiritual growth within our congregations, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, the right of conscience, and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large, the goal of world community, with peace, liberty, and justice for all, respect for the interdependent web of all existence, of which we are all a part. We are Unitarian Universalists. We pledge to affirm and promote these principles.
We have a kind of a continuation of the theme we began exploring last week. Would you get the lights for me, Max? And I have a little video I'd like to show you. This video was created by a Christian group. It's for Christians. So if the language doesn't resonate with you, please feel invited to translate.
Simple. In the past, churches have spent large amounts of resources to construct the most attractive places imaginable for the community in which they were situated. Great music, compelling teaching, and a host of programs designed to gather people together were the staple of such church communities. Anyone who wanted to come was welcome, and church members were encouraged to invite their friends and neighbors. Generally, people had a pleasant experience. The people who came and were cared for seemed relatively similar. Education, income, pastimes, race, struggles, and histories seemed to be almost identical. Eventually, someone asked the question, "What about all the people who aren't like us, but who live around us? Well, why aren't they here too?" In response, the church increased its marketing budget, direct mailing the community, taking out ads in local papers, buying radio time, releasing a fresh webpage, and offering to host the world's greatest event. The church was determined to be the center of everything great that happened in the community. Church members began to rely on the church to do the work of conveying God's story in the world. If someone could be brought to an event, they could hear about Jesus from a professional teacher. Inviting people became synonymous with evangelism. The missional church, on the other hand, empowers its members to be the church in the community. The church trains, resources, encourages, and challenges its people to live out the good news in their community with those who would otherwise be suspicious of a church and its marketing efforts. The church sends out its members to live among people unfamiliar with church customs, songs, and what it holds sacred, just like a foreign missionary. The missional church recognizes then that every believer embodies the life of the church in their neighborhood, in their school, or at their place of work. Each one of them telling God's story in the context of compassionate and genuine relationships.
This excerpt comes from a workshop in which leaders in the Unitarian Universalist Missional Church movement are explaining what it means to be missional and encouraging Unitarian Universalists to let the missional spirit transform our traditional congregations. The people who are in this missional church movement, rather than seeing people in faraway lands, South America, Africa, as foreign lands, they realize that where we live right now is a culture that is usually foreign to most of our values, and that we are called to be missionaries right here, right where we live. Don't be afraid of the word missionary. Now I will tell you. I have an idea that to be missionary means to convert an area. Oh yeah, we do. But it's not about converting people to be specifically Unitarian Universalist. It's about converting people to our values, because we believe in our values that much. You can do it in a very dramatic way. Reverend Ron Robinson has usually moved to what we call an abandoned part of the empire and is changing the world there. But the big thing is to go into your own spheres of influence. At the congregation where I serve, there are two members who are specifically living this missionary life in their own spheres of influence. Houston is an oil and gas town, so one works for BP, which we think of as kind of a conservative company. She got into an inclusivity team and has created a team from that company that is going to be marching in the Pride Parade. She had a goal of like 50 people. Already it's up to 100, and everyone is talking about that. That's being a missionary into a foreign culture. Another, who is a teacher, she had an idea about how to change the way to teach children math. This is in a public school, and one thing it meant was throwing away all the worksheets, so you can imagine she got a bad review. But her students started learning to do better. Because of her bad review, she was questioning herself. But in her church, she had people asking her, "Do you think what you're doing is right?" "Yes, I do," she replied, and they strengthened her And this is a big part of being missional. The purpose of the church is to strengthen our souls so that we can go out and strengthen the world. This teacher is, and her approach has, gone beyond her school now and really is revolutionizing math education.
Many of you know that a member of our congregation, Judy Brannon, creates the cover art for the order of service every week. And once again this week, Judy has just the perfect picture. She had the idea of the finger play that some of you may be familiar with. It goes like this. You can do it along with me if you like it. This is the church, and this is the steeple. Open the doors, and there's all the people. So Judy had that idea, and she tried to capture that on the cover art. She said, you know, it's the only thing I could think of an inside-out church. And she sent it to me and said, will that work? And I was so enthusiastic because it is the perfect image. It's the perfect image because it's exactly the opposite of what we're talking about today. So I try to keep up on trends in congregational systems. That's one of the things that I study. And there's a big emphasis amongst many congregations in the country and around the world on mission. And so in the last couple of years, I've been hearing this emphasis from within Unitarian Universalist journals and from people on missionalism. And I wasn't entirely sure what that was, but I thought it probably had something to do with this emphasis on mission, which I've read an awful lot about. You may also have heard about it as the purpose-driven church, which was popularized by Rick Warren, the senior pastor of Saddleback Church, which is the megachurch evangelical congregation originally in California and now spread on campuses all around the world. In addition to his book, The Purpose-Driven Church, he's written a book called The Purpose-Driven Life, and the whole idea at Saddleback is to help people and congregations find God's purpose for their lives. It's another way of talking about mission. Within the evangelical Christian community, there are other leaders who have popularized this and are teachers for church folks about this. Another one is Andy Stanley. He's the senior pastor, founding pastor of North Point Ministries, and their mission is to be the kind of churches that unchurched people want to attend. That's it. Everything they do is about that, being the kind of churches that unchurched people want to attend. And once people get into the church and become churched, become converted, then they're equipped and encouraged to go out and find others to bring in. Everything is focused on that mission. So I've read a lot about mission focus, and we've tried to bring some of that here to this congregation. And a big part of it, what they do at Saddleback, what they do at North Point, and what we've tried to do here is to help encourage members of the congregation to be clear enough about our mission that we can communicate with others about it. And in many ways, my sermon last week was about that, about how we communicate to others what Unitarian Universalism is, so that if this fits with them, maybe they would come check it out and find something that could be liberating for their own lives. So that's what I thought missionalism was about. But it turns out that I was completely wrong. And it turns out that according to the missional folks, the kind of message that I delivered to you last week and this focus on mission is really old school. The missional church has the exact opposite mission of bringing people into the congregation. The focus of the missional church is on sending the congregation out. So if we were going to do that finger play again with a missional focus, we'd have to do something different. Like, this is the church, this is the steeple, open the doors and there's nobody there because they're out in the community. In lots of congregations, the leaders ask questions about the needs of the congregation and the needs of the people in the congregation. They ask questions about how we can strengthen our programs, strengthen our worship services, our religious education ministry. The leaders in the missional movement say that those are the wrong questions. Now, within Unitarian Universalism, the leaders of the missional movement are a group called the Red Pill Brethren. Now, to understand their name, it's helpful if you've seen the movie The Matrix. So just a brief aside if you haven't seen the movie The Matrix. In The Matrix, there's this moment where the main character is given a choice to take either a blue pill or a red pill. And if he takes the blue pill, They tell him, you're going to wake up and you can believe whatever you want to about reality. Life will just continue on as you've always understood it to be. If you take the red pill, we will show you the truth about the world. Your eyes will be opened, and really there's no going back. And the person in the film, The Matrix, the main character, decides to take the red pill, and everything changes as he becomes aware of what the truth of reality is. The folks in the Red Pill Brethren say that they've had that kind of experience with missionalism, that they have been convicted of a different way of not only being church, but of also living their lives. And some of them have really made very dramatic changes in their lives because of this experience of being convicted of missionalism. They say that the questions that we should be asking are not the kinds of questions that I shared earlier about, like, how do we strengthen our congregation? How do we improve our worship and programs? They say that the kinds of questions that we should be asking are, who lives around us? Who are our neighbors? Who's in our community? Who's in the communities beyond our community? What are their needs? And how can we serve to help them meet those needs? So they talk about needing to make three shifts. The first shift is from internal to external. The focus for missional folks is not on the church and its needs. The focus is on the community and its needs. The second shift is from programs to people. In fact, many of the missional leaders say you should only have one program in your congregation. You should scrap everything else. The only program you should have is about equipping people to live their mission out in the world. That's all you need. Programs to people. And the last shift they say that we need to make is the shift from church leadership to community leadership. The missional leaders say that we spend too much time supporting and encouraging people to learn how to lead within our own congregations, and what we really need to be doing is helping people learn how to lead out in the communities where we live. So if we had to boil it down to just one central question, the missional folks say the question we should be asking, both as individuals and as congregations, is, who do our hearts break for? Who do our hearts break for? And once we know the answer to that question, then we know how we're called to serve. Reverend Ron Robinson is one of the leaders in this movement. You heard him referenced briefly in that reading that Bonnie shared. He is a Unitarian Universalist minister who grew up in a place called Turley, Oklahoma, which is on the northern outskirts of Tulsa. He and his wife both grew up there, and they moved away. And a few years ago, convicted by this missional spirit, they decided to move back to Turley. She, his wife, is a medical doctor who works in Tulsa, and he is a minister who created in Turley a congregation that's also a community center, that's also a foundation, and it has a lot of different names because part of missionalism is not being like too tied to any one way of doing things, so things can sometimes change kind of quickly. So it's known by a Third Place Foundation, that's also known by the Welcome Table Community Center, this place in Turley. And before I tell you about it, you need to understand that Turley is one of the places in this country that is suffering. You heard him call it an abandoned place of the empire. There are no jobs in Turley. There are no grocery stores. The people who live there have a life expectancy that's 14 years shorter than the people in the wealthiest zip code in Tulsa, which is only 6 miles away. And a big part of the reason for that is the lack of access to jobs, to healthcare, to transportation, to healthy foods, to community support services. Turley is truly a suffering place. And so they moved there, bought a house for like $20,000, and bought an abandoned church that had been vandalized for a very small sum of money, and created this campus that provides phenomenal programs in Turley. The Welcome Table Community Center has Turley's only library, a food pantry, a free clothing store, computers available to members of the community in addition to internet access. They provide meeting space for groups, and they do all of this for free. And so the Welcome Table Community Center is a huge center of support for people in Turley. They also have, in this campus that they bought, they built this huge community gardens and orchards, and they invite people to come in and help grow the food in the community garden and in the orchards. And they also invite people to learn about the food, to learn about how they could grow these things in their own yards or in abandoned lots, other places in Turley. They do a lot of what they call guerrilla gardening, taking over abandoned lots and helping people put in community gardens, and then teach people how to cook the food that grows in these places. So it's a phenomenal ministry that they're providing in Turley, and they do it with support. Reverend Robinson does it with support from his wife, who is the one who earns the income for the family, but they also do it with support from Oklahoma University, which sends in their public health students to staff the health clinic, with support from the government for the food pantry, and from a host of foundations and other Unitarian Universalist congregations. This is probably the most dramatic example of the missional spirit in Unitarian Universalism. The reason they moved there, the reason they're doing this, is because they're from Turley, and they looked around Turley and they said, who do our hearts break for? Our hearts break for the people that we grew up with, the people who still live there, who have so few opportunities. And so that's why they're planting this ministry in Turley, Oklahoma. And incidentally, they invite Unitarian Universalist congregations to come and do service learning trips there. So if we wanted to, we could take a trip down to Turley and help with the phenomenal work that they have going on. An important thing to know about this Inside Out Church, this shift from the needs of the church to the needs of the community, is that in the community center, they serve somewhere between 350 to 500 people a month through all of the free programs that they offer. They also have services every Sunday in the community center, and the attendance of those services is in the single digits. The point of the church is not the worship. The point of the church is the service. It's a really different way of thinking about being church. So I said the minister in Turley is the most dramatic example, but there are lots of other ministers and congregations who have been convicted of this missional spirit. Jake Morrill is another, the Reverend Jake Morrill. He has been serving the Unitarian Universalist congregation in Oak Ridge, Tennessee for several years. And Oak Ridge is a place where there are a lot of military people. There's a military base nearby, a lot of military folks, member of the congregation. And Reverend Morrill didn't have a lot of experience with military culture and military people before moving to Oak Ridge. And so he started getting into relationship with the people that he serves in this congregation, the people that he serves in the community. And the more he had conversations with people who were coming back from deployments, the more he realized that his heart was breaking for the stories that they were telling about what it was like to be in war and what it was like to try to come back and reintegrate into civilian life. And he was convicted by this missional spirit. And so what he decided to do was enlist in the United States Army Reserves Chaplain Corps. And he's in the process right now of completing his training in order to be a chaplain in the reserves, which he will do concurrently with his ministry in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. He talks about this really freely and says that he never would have done this if it hadn't been for his understanding of this question and really taking this question into his heart. Who is it your heart breaks for, and what are you going to do about it? Because we can all do something. Reverend Joanna Fontaine Crawford is another leader in this missional movement in Unitarian Universalism, and the excerpt that Bonnie read is from a workshop that she presented at on the ways in which she personally and the congregation she serves has been convicted by this missional spirit. She's in Texas, in Houston, and she serves a congregation, but she has a personal ministry that she does at Starbucks. She calls it her St. Arbucks ministry. She dons a clerical collar and a rainbow pin, and she takes her laptop and goes to Starbucks once a week for 3 hours and does her work there, and makes herself available for conversations with people. And in Houston, she's had lots of conversations with people who have been confounded by the contrast of a clerical collar and a rainbow pin, and have gone up to ask her how. And a lot of people have said, like, oh, do you know what that rainbow means? Thinking that maybe she just likes rainbows. And so it's been a phenomenal opportunity for her to bring a witness of GLBT inclusion and celebration in Unitarian Universalism out into the world just by going to Starbucks once a week. She says that the big part of missionalism is helping people find a way to live the missionary life in their own spheres of influence. And that's a big focus of the work that she does in the congregation that she serves. She says that everybody is positioned somewhere to bring our values out into the world. And so you heard a couple examples of folks in the congregation she serves. She challenges all of us to think about where our spheres of influence are and who our hearts break for and what we're going to do about it. And so she says, you know, if you're a stay-at-home parent and your kid plays soccer or baseball or basketball, that's your sphere of influence. And how are you going to witness to your values there? If you have a job in a corporation, that's your sphere of influence. And how are you going to witness to your values there? If you live in a community and you're part of a neighborhood community watch, that's your sphere of influence. Wherever we are, whatever it is that we're doing with our lives, each of us has a sphere of influence. And so back to that question, who is it that your heart breaks for? And how are you going to witness for your values out in the world? She's done a lot of work on learning about missionalism, and one of the things that she's discovered is that though this is kind of an emerging trend in congregational life, that it's nothing new, as very few things are. And she's found evidence of this missional spirit in Unitarian Universalist history. I love this quotation that she found from James Freeman Clark. He was a Unitarian minister. He wrote these words in a book of his all the way back in 1880. He said, "We think it's possible to have a church and even a denomination organized not on creed, but on the purpose of working together. Suppose that the condition of membership was the desire and intention of getting good and doing good. The purpose of membership is getting good and doing good. The members of the church are not those who unite in order to partake the Lord's Supper, but rather to do the Lord's work. The Lord's Supper is their refreshment after working. They come together sometimes to remember God's love and to get strength from God. Let them sit together, express their desires, confess their faults, say what they have been trying to do, where they have failed, where they've succeeded, and thereby encourage one another to run with diligence the race set before them." Words back from 1880, James Freeman Clark. I like the way that he talks about getting good and doing good and clearly indicates that the two are interconnected. All of the examples that I've given you thus far of congregations that have been embraced, that have embraced this missional spirit, are either in history or in the South. So lest you think that this is just a Southern thing, I want to tell you one more story, and this is about our neighboring Unitarian Universalist congregation in Akron. The missional church can happen on a spectrum. So you can be like Turley. You can start a ministry like Turley that's just all devoted to serving. But you can also have a traditional congregation like ours that has a little bit of the missional spirit. And that's what they're doing over at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Akron. They just won the Bennett Award for Human Justice and Social Action at the most recent General Assembly. And the reason they won the award is because they've really clarified and strengthened their social justice ministries in that congregation. And there are just three things that they do and are very focused on those three things. One is outreach to GLBT teens. Another is a food justice ministry that involves feeding the community through a community garden that they've planted on their property. And the third is their immigration justice ministry. Members of that congregation have become really active supporters of the Immigrant Worker Project, which is based in Canton and works with primarily undocumented immigrants in the Canton-Cleveland corridor and a little bit point south who come from all over the world. And through that organization, through the Immigrant Worker Project, the members of the congregation in Akron have gotten really involved in immigration justice work, but also in serving the needs of undocumented immigrants in our area. And they do this in a few ways. They go to Hartville, to the Migrant Center there, to teach English as a Second Language classes, citizenship classes, and GED classes. They host legal clinics in their building over in Fairlawn, and they provide transportation for immigrants to places like court and doctor's appointments. Small things, simple things, but things that have transformed them as individuals and have transformed them as a congregation, and have also brought them into relationship with undocumented immigrants in our area. So it's not just a Southern thing. You can do this wherever you are. The point is figuring out how we're called to serve and then finding a way to go and make it happen. I struggled with this idea of missionalism a little bit as I've learned about it, because I really love this. I love traditional congregations. I love the way that we work. I like our religious education programs. I like our small group ministries. I like our social events. I like gathering for worship as a community. All of this is important to me, and I don't want to give this up, but I don't think it's an either or. I really think it can be a both and. I think that we can be traditional church, that we can do the things that we do now and embrace the missional spirit of finding ways to discover who our hearts break for and how we want to go out and serve into the world. So it's a good time to be asking this question, because we are getting ready to do a major expansion here. And as the house that we bought last winter is coming down on Tuesday. The building expansion teams and the capital campaign teams are meeting. They're meeting with the architect next week to talk about the site plan for the new fellowship hall behind us, to talk about the renovations in the church. The capital campaign leaders are meeting to talk about how we're going to raise money to make all this happen. And so we're very focused on our own needs right now, because this is an enormous undertaking for us, and it's going to take lots of effort, lots of us contributing in many ways. And I don't think that that's a bad thing. However, it can't just be for us. We can't just be doing this just for us, the people who are already here. We have to have a larger vision in mind, and we do, which is the reason that I wanted to share our vision statement today. Way back when we were still dreaming this into being, we were clear that the reason that we want to do this is not just for us, but so that we can carry on our legacy and so that we can embrace the potential that we have for connecting and serving the people in our community. I have particular ideas about how I want to do that. I know some of you have ideas that you've shared with me. I'm sure others of you have ideas that you haven't shared with anyone. So this is a good time to start thinking about, when this beautiful new building is built, what are we going to do with it that's not just for us? How are we going to open it to the community and have it be a resource for people who live in this community? And how are we going to use it as a resource for us to reach out and serve this community that we're a part of? These are important questions for us to be discerning now before we've taken the steps to put the new building in place, so that when it's here, we know what our mission is and how we're called. So between then and now, I hope that you'll give it some serious consideration. And our assistant moderator, Dan Flippo, will be leading a session later this fall to help us kind of begin to articulate some of these answers for ourselves, so that we can be clear with each other and be on the same page. In the meantime, I leave you with the question, who do your hearts break for? And how are you called to serve?
And then some. What do? I got plenty of then some. What do? I got plenty and then some. What do now? Go out and help somebody. Get plenty and then some too. Got a roof over my head. What do? Got a roof over my head, what do? Got a roof over my head, what do? Go out and help somebody, get a roof over their head too. Got supper on the table, what do? Got supper on the table, what do? Got supper on the table. What do? Now. Go out and help somebody. Get supper on the table, too. I'm going to heaven. What do I do? I'm going to heaven. What do I do? Now, now, gotta help somebody. Go to heaven too. Some, what do I do? I got plenty and then some, what do I do? Got plenty and then some, what do I do? Lord, Lord, gotta help somebody get plenty and then some too.
Love will guide us if we let it. Let love guide you today, this week, until we meet again. Go in peace.